providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we are focusing this whole show on the resource sector. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Joe Mazumdar. We are now chatting with Matt Geiger, managing partner at MJG Capital. And Matt, I want to focus less so on the overarching market and more on individual news stories that have come out of the resource sector moving forward. So first and foremost, I want to talk about this proposed hard rock mining royalty on federal land in the U.S. Now, the proposal is for anywhere between 4 to 8% of this royalty. I know that some investors kind of look at this and say, ooh, well, does that shy development away from the U.S.? But we do need to understand that this royalty would just be on federal land. So should we focus more on companies that don't have federal land? Matt, how are you filtering through this right now, just proposal?
Well, good to be back on the program, guys. And also good seeing you very briefly at Beaver Creek. Obviously, you know, everybody's very busy running from meeting to meeting. But of course, the Biden administration decided to drop this proposal on the week of the conference, just to put a further damper on things. As you mentioned, the nuts and bolts of it, there's an interagency working group led by the Department of the Interior, and they came out with a proposal to put a royalty of between 4 to 8% on hard rock minerals that are being mined on federal lands in the U.S. So obviously on face value, there was a lot of panic and quite a bit of negative reactions from industry participants. You know, I have 2 points on this. The first is more from a policy perspective. This is frankly insane, and it really goes directly counter to the Biden administration's stated goal of encouraging domestic critical mineral production within the United States. It's abundantly clear to me that whoever headed this working group has no experience whatsoever in hard rock mining and likely confused our industry with oil and gas extraction. And it is quite common within oil and gas to see royalties of 8, 10, 15, even 20% on certain operations. And the operators there can still make decent money even with those types of royalty rates. But of course, in mining, as we all know, it's a completely different story. And even an additional 2-3% royalty on a given development stage project can absolutely be the difference between that project being pushed forward to production versus sitting in purgatory indefinitely. And this is particularly true for large bulk tonnage projects. If you have a smaller, very high grade gold mine, you can of course do with a slightly higher royalty rate and still make a decent penny. But if you're thinking of copper porphyries in Arizona, which of course we're relying on, the Biden administration recently included copper within the list of strategic minerals, and it's an incredibly important metal for us going forward as the world continues to push towards decarbonization. And this is just an absolute showstopper for the vast majority of porphyries that without such royalties have a decent chance of getting into production here over the next 5 to 10 years. I will say, the Mining Act of 1872, again, it's worth reiterating, we haven't had a change to federal mining laws in the United States for over 150 years. It is actually very generous in this respect. There's no royalty charged federally for mining on federal grounds. You know, that's in contrast to other established and developed mining jurisdictions like Australia or Canada. And so, look, I mean, to be fair, maybe we could do with a 0.5% or 1% royalty, bring us a little bit more in line with the developed world. But 4 to 8% again is just outrageous. And again, whoever wrote this law either has zero knowledge of the hard rock mineral industry, which I think is the most likely explanation. I guess another explanation is that they're trying to stop the industry completely in its tracks, really against the stated intentions of the Biden administration to push through, you know, additional domestic critical mineral supply. So those are the thoughts on the policy perspective. That said, I do think after digesting this, there was pretty extreme overreaction to the rule. And I would argue it actually has zero impact from an investment perspective. And in order to come to this conclusion, you have to look at the political realities. Such a proposal to actually become law would have to be passed both through the House of Representatives and the United States Senate, and then signed by the president in order to be implemented. Firstly, the House is controlled by the GOP, controlled by Republicans at the moment. So such a proposal is dead in the water, wouldn't even be brought up for a vote in the House. So that right there is a showstopper. And even in the Senate, where the Democrats have the slimmest of majorities, it's a 50-50 split. But because the Democrats hold the White House, the Democrats are considered to have the majority because the vice president can break any 50-50 tie. But even if it were hypothetically brought up to a vote within the Senate, which it won't, there are at least half a dozen and probably closer to a dozen Democratic senators that would vote against this immediately because they don't have political death wishes. So examples include the Democratic senators from Nevada, Cortez Masto and Rosen, the Democratic senators from Arizona, obviously a major copper producer, Sinema and Kelly, likely the Democratic senators from Colorado, Hickenlooper and Bennett. And then, of course, there's Joe Manchin, who would absolutely be against such legislation. So due to the political realities, this did cause some headline risk. It's definitely not, you know, positive headline news for the industry generally, but from a practical perspective, this should have zero impact, in my opinion, on how people view investing in United States mineral projects. And to reiterate it, draw a line under this, I would bet every dollar that I have that this deal, that this proposal does not get through in this Congress, you know, through the next elections, late 2024, and very likely, you know, for the foreseeable future. So it's dead in the water. Again, it's not positive messaging, and it's perplexing coming from an administration that proclaims to be pushing for critical mineral production, but it's just not going to be implemented. It has no chance of being implemented, and I think that needs to be underscored.
Yeah, Matt, it's really strange messaging indeed, because you can't be on one side saying, hey, we want to give grants and money out to development stage projects in lithium and nickel and rare earths and maybe copper. And on the other hand, saying, but we also want to put a royalty on their 48%, which would really undercut any good that they're doing with trying to advance these projects. But from a perception standpoint in the industry, you know, this same kind of thing happened in Mexico, where everybody was worried about what the tax royalties would be, and they kind of overreacted, and then everybody fled Mexico only to realize it didn't get as bad as they thought. We've seen it in Peru and Chile. We've seen it in other South American countries. We've seen it in African countries, West African countries, where proposals came on the board. They didn't live up to the hype, but that didn't stop the selling. And so a lot of people sell first and ask questions later. What kind of messaging do you think we need to see in the industry to be able to attract more generalists? Because that's not going to bring generalist investors into the sector.
No, that's right. It's not helpful. I mean, ultimately, putting this aside, I think we need more of the same from the Biden administration. And it's worth noting that, you know, this is a progressive, this is a left-leaning administration. And the fact that they are pushing for mining, again, putting this outlandish proposal aside, I think is a big development in the industry and something that we're going to see for years ahead. At least some portions of the left are on board for responsible mining within the United States. And, you know, the financial support is now there with the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act. I think it's well understood or better understood now that the next step to actually spur the next generation of mines to come online here is to shorten permitting timelines and help fast track some of the projects that should be built. Look, I'm not an absolutist when it comes to mining. Obviously, this is my industry, but I don't think every project should be built. Every mine has negative externalities, both on the environmental and the social side. But some mines have externalities that are far worse than others. And so I don't think you need to have an all of the above, we'll support every single mining project to the hilt mentality for the government to be supportive. And we've seen some positive steps like South 32's Taylor Hermosa project down in Arizona, receiving, you know, fast track federal permitting status for the first time. To my understanding, that's still the only project in the country that has gained that designation. But one would presume that there are another couple projects to come, we'll say, over the next 6 or 12 months. And then we've seen some steps backwards where, you know, look at the Ambler district up in Alaska, Again, all mining projects have negative externalities on the social or environmental front. But in the scheme of things, that is not a particularly controversial project. And the fact that the permitting of the road has been held up, in my view, unnecessarily for a couple years now, is unfortunate and kind of an unforced error from this administration. However, you know, there are other projects like the Twin Metals project in the Boundary Environmental District of Minnesota that has been, you know, stopped in its tracks. And it's worth saying that is a much more controversial project. A lot of locals against it, and then also a lot of environmental groups more broadly against it as well due to the perceived environmental impact. So I do think you need to look at things on a case-by-case basis. And it's okay, from my perspective, for the government to throw its support behind some projects that have less social and environmental externalities, while, you know, stopping others that may not be in the public's best interest. So I don't think it's realistic to expect an all of the above support, particularly from this administration. But putting aside this, you know, outlandish proposal, I think they're headed in the right direction, and it's a marked difference from what we've seen from the past few Democratic administrations. And I think it's a sign of things to come. You know, more moderate Democrats, more moderate leftists are coming to the view that if we want to decarbonize, there has to be an increase and, you know, I would say massive increase in mineral extraction in order to reach these goals. There's no two ways about it. Increased recycling is going to be part of the solution, but it's only, you know, 20% of the overall solution. And, you know, it's been a long road, but I think folks are slowly wrapping their minds around that. And I think that's a positive longer term tailwind for our industry, ultimately.
Oh, absolutely, Matt. Bigger picture, having government supportive of what mostly are these critical minerals, we haven't seen them this supportive of any mining, really, over at least the last couple decades while I've been around the sector. But that being said, it's not just governments that need to support some of these builds. It's also other funding partners. And that ties us into kind of this next story, which is Stellantis, the automaker behind Chrysler and Alfa Romeo. They most recently just announced a $90 million investment into Argentina Lithium and Energy for just a 20% stake. This is continuing this trend of large car makers, even electronics companies, showing more interest on controlling their supply of some of these critical minerals. What's important about this story, again, kind of in this big picture theme of different people, different organizations being supportive or at least entering the mining sector?
That's right. Well, let's talk about this specific deal first. I will say this is simply a wild investment. I used outlandish to describe the proposed change to royalty rates on U.S. federal lands. This is also an outlandish investment, objectively. This investment, again, $90 million from Stellantis into Argentina Lithium and Energy, implies a $600 million valuation for Argentina Lithium as a company. And they have four very early stage lithium projects based in Salta and Catamarca provinces in Argentina. It's worth noting that before this deal was announced, just look at their market cap earlier this week, and the deal was announced yesterday, Argentina Lithium was receiving a 30 million Canadian valuation from the market. So 90 million US, so closer to 120 CAD for 20% stake in the company implies a $600 million valuation. So we're literally looking at a 20x uplift if you take Stellantis's valuation at face value. So they massively overpaid for this by an order of magnitude. You know, to the point where there are some conspiracy theories out there. And look, I wouldn't rule these out entirely, you know, out of hand, just due to the massive discrepancy between Argentina Lithium's valuation and where Stellantis has decided to put money into the company. But that said, you know, maybe there are kickbacks or something untoward going on. But my best guess, you know, using Hanlon's razor as the guiding principle here, is that it's a combination largely of ignorance and probably a misunderstanding of the industry. Clearly, Stellantis has some money to blow. That much is clear. And then, you know, maybe the third variable here is a desperation to secure critical mineral supplies. So, you know, again, I wouldn't rule it out entirely, but my best guess here is that this decision was driven by ignorance quite a bit of cash and some desperation thrown in there as well. Look, with all this said, I'm a bit reluctant to bite the hand that feeds, so to speak. While Stellantis is not invested in any projects or companies in which the MGG fund is invested, they honestly have been a very valuable source of capital for critical mineral explorers and developers over the past 18 months. In addition to this deal, I jotted down a little list here, and I'm probably missing a few of the names, but they've made upwards of, you know, close to a dozen different investments in juniors here since the spring of 2022. Examples include McEwen Copper, also down in Argentina, Alliance Nickel, who has a laterite project in Western Australia that they're looking to heap leach. That's an interesting one to watch just from a technical risk perspective. You know, will they be able to pull that off? They made an investment recently in a company called Cunico in Norway, which is looking at developing a nickel and cobalt project. They've invested in a lithium company called Controlled Thermal Resources in California. That was a $100 million investment, so not chump change by any means. There's a lithium company called Vulcan Energy that received money from Stellantis within the past few months. And then NioCorp, with their critical mineral project in Nebraska, has also received support from Stellantis. So they've been out there deploying aggressively. And ultimately, to their credit, strategically, I think they've been smart by anticipating a raw material crunch for EV manufacturers and acting earlier and far more aggressively than their other competitors in the OEM space. Yes, we've seen deals from GM, Ford. I mentioned Volkswagen. Tesla's done a couple deals, but nobody to the degree that Stellantis has. And so from that perspective, I think their foresight is commendable. However, tactically, they have been way off base in many of these deals, in my opinion, both in terms of the selection of assets, management teams in some cases, and then the prices that they've paid in multiple instances. And this is just the most recent example, particularly on the valuation front. It was pretty egregious seeing the amount that they're paying for their 20% stake in Argentina Lithium. So again, I don't want to be too critical of the group. I think we need more of this and not less. But I do hope that whether it's Stellantis or some of these other EV manufacturers, they can be a bit more discerning with where they deploy capital and at what prices they choose to do so.
Yeah, Matt, it's nice to see the manufacturers like the automakers and the battery companies coming down the food chain and starting to invest in the development stage projects and the critical minerals. Although, like you say, I don't know that a spraying and praying approach is the best approach, just to sprinkle it in. But it is interesting to see that happening in critical minerals. But if we shift over to the precious metals, it's a totally different environment. And like we all just got back from the conferences out in Colorado, and gold and silver companies aren't privy to what lithium and rare earth and nickel and copper companies are getting. They're in a totally different situation as far as attracting capital. A lot of the companies we talked to were kind of dead in the water until they can finally do a raise. They can't even announce their work programs. They barely did a lot of work this last year. And it's looking like there's the story of the haves and the have-nots. Some companies are well-funded, have good programs, and a lot of companies are waiting for that money. But we have seen a lot of the companies report back to us. They're talking with some of the mid-tier and major companies as far as bringing on a strategic partner, talking to the royalty companies about coming in maybe on a royalty or a stream on a non-core metal in their project. There's also the capital markets guys circling the blood-infested shark waters here. But their terms are not really that great with interest rates where they are. How do the precious metals get out of the funk? Because they don't have manufacturers. They don't have government money helping them out.
Yeah, I think you point on touch on a really important point here, Shad. And this is going to be a long-term headwind, especially for the gold and gold-focused equities. Look, both from an investment perspective, there just simply aren't the end users looking to deploy capital into gold with 90% of gold, 90% plus of gold demand going either into coins, gold bars, or jewelry. There's just not enough of an industrial application to justify, you know, end users pumping massive amounts of money into gold projects. So there's no reason to expect that's going to start up here. And then additionally, on a permitting front and a social license front, you're starting to see environmental groups, you're starting to see local communities differentiate between whether a given project, even, you know, assuming the same environmental impacts, whether a given project is, you know, say copper or nickel or lithium focused, or whether it's gold focused. And at least societally, I think gold will continue to be looked down upon, both by regulators and NGOs, and it's a risk. Of course, there are positives to this, particularly if you own physical gold. This is going to have, in my opinion, over the very long term, an effect on gold supply relative to copper or nickel or lithium assets. You know, with the same externalities, it will be harder to permit and bring gold mines into production. And like you astutely touched on, there's not going to be that end user financial backing. So it's going to have to truly come from the investment community and not from strategics like we're seeing elsewhere in the metal space. That's not to say that, gold investments are dead in the water because of this. I just think investors have to be that much more cautious and that much more discerning between the companies that they choose to back. So you have to look for extremely high margin, good looking projects, and also those that, you know, make sense on an ESG front. And I know a lot of folks in the industry cringe when one brings up ESG, but that's just the reality here. All things equal, projects with less environmental and social impacts have a higher opportunity of being pushed forward to production. And so I think investors are going to have to continually integrate that lens into their investment selection process.
All right, Matt, we'll wrap it up here. We are out of time for these segments, but we do appreciate your time sharing some of your insights on at least some of the news that has come out more focused on the resource sector. And seems like the big takeaway still being that, look, the precious metals might still have some issues. The companies still have some issues finding financings, but boy, oh boy, there's some interesting deals being done in the critical minerals space, even if they don't make mathematical sense. Matt, thank you very much for taking time on this weekend show. Everybody, thanks for tuning in this weekend. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. Please keep in touch with us through email. And please be sure to check out our website and podcast for all the daily editorials and company updates. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Have a great weekend.